Hi, I'm Stefan.
And I'm Ben.
Is my 90-minute rule a joke to you?
Yeah, I didn't realize how
this
long this
was. So long! It was so much!
And that's the opinion of Michael, the other host of
Animating in Threes!
I thought animations, like, they're hard to do. You can only do them for about 75 minutes before people start jumping out of windows. But, oh my god! And it's 2 hours and 10 minutes!
That's a bit of preamble for Michael's thoughts on Yu-Gi-Oh! The Dark Dimensions, which we'll be discussing today. But what are we, you might be asking, if you've never listened to us before? We are an animation podcast!
Which, by the viewing numbers, you haven't.
We are an animation podcast where three people watch an animated series or show from an animator's perspective. Before we get into Yu-Gi-Oh! Dark Side of Dimensions, we're going to be talking about
Tunes we've tuned into.
And look at the time descriptions below if you want to skip this and get straight to the good stuff.
This is the first time we've ever actually said it at the proper time.
I know, I am so proud of myself.
It's only been 29 episodes, but start us off, Ben. What have you been watching animated-wise?
So, I finally got to watch something I said I would watch towards the beginning of the podcast. I watched Laika's The Missing Link.
Oh, was it good?
I loved it. I think with their marketing, they sold it too much on Zach Galifianakis being this bumbling missing link thing. But no, it's about the Hugh Jackman character and him being an adventurer and everything.
Hugh Jackman's the main character,
yes,
in it? I thought it was the Monkey Man.
No, it isn't. It's Hugh Jackman, him proving himself to be a good adventurer.
Oh, no. Okay, the marketing botched that one up.
It really did. That's why I didn't really watch it in the first place, because it looked too kiddie, but it really wasn't.
It looked too much like Smallfoot.
Exactly. Yeah. But no, it's such a great adventure film. And like, adventure films are one of my favorite genres of cinema. So it was, yeah, I was really surprised by this, and it was great. The animation was spectacular. But no, Missing Link is amazing. It's the Laika film that came out this year. I think it bombed at the box office.
Just go watch and support Laika films so they can make more.
Laika's amazing. Give them as much as you can.
To me, the only misstep might have been Box Trolls, but since then they've done...
Box Trolls was fun.
I thought it was just alright.
I mean, none of them as good as Coraline, because Coraline is the best.
I mean,
film
I really like Paranorman and Kubo and the Two
Strings. I haven't seen Paranorman. Kubo and the Two Strings is miserable. I loved it, but it was miserable.
I also started watching the anime Maiden Abyss. So I know it gets really sad towards the end
of it. Yes, it does.
But right now, it's pretty fun. There's a guy who's a robot, and he has stretchy hands.
Think of it like this, Michael. It's like, the whole premise is these two cutesy little kids have to go down this giant hole, this well thing, to try and find the girl's mother. Seems like a basic premise, except problem with this world is this hole is so deep that you go down and you have to fight all the dangers. But if you go up a level, you start to feel effects. Like, your eyes start pulling up with blood, or you lose...
Don't spoil it.
Humanity.
Is this like the hole from Spy Kids 3, Ouch My Eyes?
Yes,
whatever
that
film
is.
Was called. That
I think it was called Game Over, wasn't
yeah.
it?
You know when they jump in a hole? And I never watched the film, but I just saw that those little, like, previews at the start of videotapes.
Yeah.
Remember when videotapes used to have ads?
Yeah.
Same thing.
And they jump in the hole, and they're like, how long we've been falling? And then... Robert Rodriguez, and what's the girl's name? She says, like, the watch doesn't tell time. I just remember that that little clip.
I remember.
But anyway, it's
like that, the whole like that.
No, nothing like that.
Maiden Abyss is gonna get depressing, though.
What did you think of the style, though? Because I remember when I saw it as well, I compared the first few episodes to a Studio Ghibli aesthetic in that it really captures nature.
I do really agree with that. Because, like, the first, when you're introduced to it, they're in the pit in one of the first levels, and it's just, like, really, really gorgeous.
Are they falling?
No.
No, there's like little
they're
platforms.
Exploring. Oh, that's like a game.
So they're trying to find relics for the community.
Their orphanage.
Up top.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. No, I thought it was really great. And it also had that type of adventure-y type feel when they were in the pit as well, which I'm guessing I'm going to get into as... Because the last episode I watched, they just went into
Do you think that there's not... Does the orphanage send them into the pit?
Yes.
Oh, do you think maybe there's nothing in the pit, but they have to throw children in the pit periodically to appease some
no,
kind of like demigod
no,
that's in
not
there?
It.
No.
That then like brings nourishment to the orphanage?
No, the whole world wants... This town is around this giant pit, and their
no one knows who got there.
Their whole existence is basically just going down and getting things up and working out what the mystery of this pit is.
Is it near the orphanage?
Yeah. Imagine the town is built around this giant pit.
No, just like just like Cozy Oak's lovely orphanage. To get there, just turn left at the demon hole.
Okay, so I've also watched the first two episodes of Rick and Morty in season 4.
Wait, is that out?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Stefan's watched the first episode. But yeah, it's the first episode was... I thought I would be tired of it by the time it aired because it's just... Like, there's been 3 seasons. What else can you do with this sort of concept? But it was quite good.
They make you wait the 2 years and then insult you every other week.
They don't insult the audience in this.
No, they were, well, that's what I appreciated.
That's different.
Yeah, there were a lot less audience bashing. And they actually, in the first episode, did some really interesting animation things, especially with the Gloopy Gloop monster, say, for non-spoiler reasons.
Also, I love how anti-fascist Rick is.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, I've been enjoying that as well. Stefan, what have you been watching?
Try to keep this as brief as possible. I finished Be the Beginning, the Netflix anime. I said this earlier in a podcast episode. It's an odd show where it has intertwined a really serious and grounded crime drama about a serial killer linked to this supernatural anime powered thing. It's like Akira, where you got these experimented kids that have these superpowers. And throughout the entire series, it remained that weirdness where, apart from the animation style, because the aesthetic itself kept this griminess, which I really like. Not griminess as in we talk about, but griminess as in like the cyberpunk darkness kind of thing.
Mm.
And that was really cool. But I think the show really got confused by the end because I didn't quite know what its message was. Because, it was handling a serious crime drama and a supernatural thing. It felt like there needed to be a middle point, but there never quite was.
Isn't that kind of what Batman is?
No. This is, like, these are two different. Like, imagine a real bouncing off the walls action supernatural thing with a really, really normal serial killer story. There's these two stories, but they never really intertwine. Anyhow, the drama and tension in it really proves well. It's got some great writing, and I still found it very interesting.
Okay, cool.
I started watching No Guns Life. This this anime, the main character has a gun as a head.
Yeah, you showed me a picture of that.
Oh, yeah, you did. Yeah.
Imagine a noir, like a noir story,
except he's got
a gun as a head. That is literally what this story is.
I've seen this before. I'm sure I have.
So is it good? Sure. Does he shoot criminals and like the bullets are super big and he goes, oh no, I was only meant to apprehend him.
It reminds me of Fooly Cooly in that setup. It actually has almost the same dialogue where it says, this is a normal town, except for the giant mechanica making all these robots. It's literally almost the same sort of setup.
How do you think he goes to like the doctor's office like that? Just turn your head and cough. Bang!
But anyhow,
can he talk?
Yeah, he can. He has monologues in his head like all noir people do.
In his head, he's really articulate, but when he talks, he just like shouts the word bang.
No, he talks normal.
Looks like the victim was stabbed 14 times. What do you think, gun cop? Bang! Bang, bang, bang! Bang!
No, but I really like this the art direction in this. It's gone for like a cyberpunk kind of anime Ghost in the Shell kind of thing, but also keeping it quite sepia. Like, everything looks like browns and kind of Mad Max-style rusted metal. And that's really interesting.
In this universe, a baby's BB guns.
No, they're not.
Get it?
Yes, I do. BB.
It's very good.
Baby guns.
That's what Hideo Kojima did in Bloody Death Stranding. The baby is called a BB.
Ah, shit.
And the last thing, I started watching the volleyball anime Haiku. It is the greatest thing I've ever watched.
Do people speak in haikus?
No, they don't.
What's the bloody point? Speak in haikus, otherwise don't call yourself haiku.
That'd be really annoying. But it's done by Production ID, which also did the Koroko no Basket, the basketball anime I really like.
Oh, you were obsessed with that a few years ago.
Yeah, it's great. But the animation is superb. I love how specific into details. Like, I now know how to play volleyball simply by watching this anime.
Okay, is it correct, though? Is it correct?
Well, it's probably exaggerated, but that's for the... I love how each character has a specific thing they need to learn, and it shows...
I need to learn to hit the ball with my hands.
I learned to play volleyball from Top Gun.
Ah, with all the shirtless men.
Yeah, you just have to play in an environment that's deeply homoerotic, and also you can't wear anything but a pair of skinny jeans.
No, but I really love the story in this. The characters are just so lovable, and it is just fantastic. What have you watched anything animated-wise?
Yes, actually.
Oh, I was going to skip over you.
I know, I was waiting for Ben just to stop and I'd have to, like, interject. But no, I watched the 1951 Chuck Jones-directed Looney Tunes short, A Bear for Punishment.
Oh.
I haven't seen that
it's
one.
It's the Father's Day short of the Three Bears. You know the Three Bear Looney Tunes?
Yeah, yeah.
It's really funny.
Mm.
But, like, in a way that's, you know, like, regular funny. Not just kind of, like, awkward because it's 65 years old.
So I'm
it's
like,
really good.
Okay.
It's really nice. It's just a Chuck Jones directed Looney Tunes short about a parody of the Three Bears, where like the father is kind of angry and abusive and the mother's is kind of like meek and timorous, and then the junior bear is just like 7 feet tall, obese, and he's an idiot. I mean, he wears like a nappy even though he's like seven.
Amazing.
And there's this really funny joke that I always quote with my dad. When just like the dad's like reading a book in front of the fire, he's nice and cozy, and the bear and Junior's just like, I'm gonna fill your favorite pipe for you, Dad. And then he goes to the cupboard and he pulls out, he reads the label and he reads like GUNPOWDER, tobacco. And then he starts putting the gunpowder in the pipe, and he's like, I'm a good speller, I am. And then he's like spelling to himself, and he goes like, C-A-T, dog, B-A-D, Rhode Island. It's a really funny joke for like back then. And then, yeah, he fills the pipe with gunpowder and he lights it, and the dad just explodes.
So that sounds like something that...
It's really funny.
If it was in Disney Plus, they would have to put those disclaimers they've been putting in front of things.
Yeah, don't actually fill your dad's pipe.
No, it's like, this was made back in a time where this stuff was socially accessible. We do not condone it now. Do you see that there's a lot of old Disney shorts on Disney Plus? Like the Steamboat Willie and all that sort of stuff?
Is there?
Yeah.
Steamboat Willie is public domain now.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay, so Netflix can put it on there.
I think so. Yeah, you can redistribute it and edit it.
Guys, I know what we're doing today with
this podcast is officially sponsored by Steamboat Willie.
Amazing. 10 out of 10.
We're going to get a cease and desist in the mail.
As if anyone's going to listen to this.
I know. Unless our one listener is Bob Iger. He's the one mystery subscriber.
Stefan, why don't you take it away with Yu-Gi-Oh?
So, Yu-Gi-Oh! The Dark Side of Dimensions is a 2016 animated film in the Yu-Gi-Oh! Franchise based on the original works of Kazuki Takahashi. The film was released to coincide with the 20th anniversary of the entire franchise and features characters from the original series.
Is this why it's like such a sprawling long epic?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll get into that a bit later. But the film itself was based off the manga version, with its author stepping in as the film's writer and main producer.
Oh, that's really good. Good on
that. It was directed by Satoshi Kuwabara, who had previously directed the fourth Yu-Gi-Oh! Series, Yu-Gi-Oh! Zexal. The crew who worked on it had already...
I love that how people name the Yu-Gi-Oh! Series. Oh, just...
Also, I have a question. Why is it called Yu-Gi-Oh! In the other series of it, if it doesn't have Yu-Gi-Oh.
Because at that
stage... Also, the card game is called Yu-Gi-Oh! In that universe,
no,
is it?
No.
Oh, it's not?
The card game in the universe is called Duel Monsters.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
It's called Yu-Gi-Oh! As a franchise in the trading card game.
Oh, yeah, there's like techno. That's not techno.
So, Yu-Gi-Oh! Is... Oh, to answer your question, it's called Yu-Gi-Oh! Because Yugi is the main character... O was the sound...
Look at the runtime.
No, O was the sound that he would make when he transformed into Atem, the pharaoh.
What?
Yugi. Oh.
Like, he would go, oh!
Hello there.
That's just what
he transforms. Oh.
So,
I transform. Imagine if it was pit on me.
Imagine if it was like a painful transformation, just Yugi, ouch.
Yugi,
ouch.
So, Yu-Gi-Oh! Is a Japanese manga series created by Kazuki Takahashi, as we said before.
Just Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, asterisk, unintelligible screaming.
It's hard to make a franchise based on that. So, it was centered around gaming, supernatural, and horror elements. It ran in the weekly Shonen Jump magazine, along with its various spin-offs and sequel series. So, the original series commenced in 1996 and ended its run in 2004. Unlike the trading card game, heavily established by the anime as the basis of its franchise, because we know it's a card game, The original manga was about all sorts of games.
Okay, so the manga came first.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I was going to ask that, but I was like, Stefan might mention
that. Yeah, it was originally the manga, and then it was adapted into...
a card game.
Into the anime, and then the card game came from the anime.
Oh, because okay.
Yeah. I'll get into that a bit later, but that's how it
started. Was Yu-Gi-Oh! Like massive at your primary school?
Yes, it was.
For like a very brief period of time.
No, mine was like 3 years.
Really?
People literally photocopied cards and gave it to people.
Watching this brought back like so many repressed memories of just that like mid-early-ish 2000 like Yu-Gi-Oh! Mania in Australian suburban primary school.
I even went to see the movie when it came out in cinemas.
But I have some things to say about Yu-Gi-Oh!
Sorry, Stefan.
No, because we, like, at school, people were obsessed about it, and back then, you just had to be obsessed with whatever, like, the broader yes. public consciousness was obsessed with, lest ye be left out.
Mm.
And, you know, you went to, like, cheap $2 shops, and you bought knockoff decks just to get good ones. And you used to, like, rummage through packets at, like, $2 shops to mm-hmm. see if there was good cards, because packets were randomized, and you didn't want to double up. And then it was such a craze, and you lived and breathed it. And again, there were parties, and there were trades, and you just, every waking moment of your life is just dedicated to this fucking card game. I didn't understand it a bit. The entire time, just pretending. I didn't know what the rules were. I didn't know what any of the cards meant. I didn't know what attack scores
honestly,
meant.
Honestly, I didn't either, but it was still
cool. I didn't
cool.
know how to play.
I just liked the illustrations
yeah,
of the things.
Yeah, exactly. Just like, this looks like a nice card. All I knew was that the more red balls at the top with the yeah, little stars, the better the card yeah. was. So
that's
you just kind of got those.
Well.
Also, if you got Exodia, you just won or something.
Someone tried to explain it to me when I was like 16, 17 years old.
And it's nonsense. It doesn't make any sense. Like, all the rules are arbitrary. It's just that, like...
Especially in this movie as well.
Yeah, it's like my dragon of the boondock saints, I don't know, has 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, that means that I suck the life points out of your mega dragon and I get to take your deck. And then, like, people would, like, you could just say anything. Like, it's like, ah, here's my dark magician card. It means I win.
If you were Yu-Gi-Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's just like nothing meant anything. Here's my trap card. What does that mean? It means I get to keep your whole deck forever. Here's a soul card. What does it do? I don't know. I remember someone at my primary school just ripped off like the film, like the front of the Yu-Gi-Oh card to make it blank and just called that a soul card. And the people believed him because the soul card used to be like blank.
Yeah.
He just ripped off the entire face. It's like, I'm going to play my... How did you get 19 soul cards? Oh, because you bought a whole deck and just scraped all the pictures off. Here's my blue eyes white dragon. It's powerful. Why? What could it do?
It's a dragon.
I don't know. Yeah, no, it's a dragon. Here are my god cards. What happens if you play all of them? You win? Did anyone understand it?
I didn't.
Yes.
Did you? Did you know how to play?
Yes.
How?
Do you still have cards? A deck. Do you still have them?
Yeah, I do.
Can we see
this? I used to have this deck that was like a foot tall and was like a huge rubber band wrapped around it.
Yeah, that's exactly how mine was too. Yeah,
mine was a bit less, but my brother and my brother also had some. Which his was larger than mine.
Yeah, which by the way is the proper way to keep like a children's card game deck. In this universe, they open up like boxes with like velvet lining to keep cards in. It's like, this is my most prized possession. I had to mortgage my house to buy a blue eyes white dragon.
The thing is also with Yu-Gi-Oh, the original Yu-Gi-Oh rules were quite simple, but as the series became got more sequels and whatnot, they started refining the rules, refining how to play it, introducing more summoning techniques, and to the stage where now it is broken. Like, there are so many
conflicting rules
that
all
the
rules
conflict, all the rules have effects. Like,
There's so much to keep track of, though. Everyone's just playing different cards, and none of the cards have a theme. They're just random fantasy things.
Like, the one...
I'm going to play the oak tree's ankle of Bayswater.
But now they kind of do have things. Like,
they're
all
kind of
set
vaguely
families.
Egyptian.
No, not all of them now. Like, now there's like hero themed ones, there's dragon themed.
There's,
literally
a knight one
themed.
In the thing.
Oh, I have Exodia, the Forbidden One, and I'm going to play Tom Selleck.
The original series, the original anime series, follows Yugi Moto, a young timid boy who, upon solving the ancient millennium puzzle, becomes host
It's just like a jigsaw.
Pretty much.
It's like four pieces.
It's not four pieces. It's more than that.
Becomes host to the spirit of an ancient pharaoh named
Aten. It's a thing you buy in, like, zoo gift shops.
I am never going to get through this.
Can I ask a question, a legit question? Does Atom actually look like that?
Yes.
Okay. He looks Here's another question. I assumed Egyptians were all, you know, tanned and all that. Why is Atom white?
They're Japanese people with enormous hair. So, every character in that show looks like they're in the process of being struck by lightning.
Okay, continue please, Stefan.
The pharaoh also wears
continue please, Stefan.
We're never going to get through this. He wears like leather fetish gear.
No, it's like fetish gear, but it's also kind of the school uniform.
Yeah.
He wears it as like a cape.
Oh.
Through the course of the series, the duo saves the world from various card game driven psychopaths, standing on your own feet, and a Thames mysterious cryptic.
The universe is so stupid.
When the whole universe revolves around a card game.
Everyone takes it so seriously.
Michael, in Yu-Gi-Oh! One of the other series called Yu-Gi-Oh! Arc V, you know how there's multiverses? There's a multiverse in this, but each of the multiverses are divided by a different dueling style. So you've got the standard dueling style universe, you've got the XYZ summon universe, you've got the synchro summon universe, and they all have different, like, laws and
whatnot. That would, like, be having different universes where just, like, poker rules were different. Like, one universe is the Texas Hold'em universe, where everyone plays Texas Hold'em. Do people gamble in that universe? Like,
that is the gambling.
They play the card game, whoever wins.
They gamble with their card game.
Like they did that with the pieces of the puzzle in the movie.
That's so strange.
So Studio Gallop
is... Just flip a coin.
Exactly. Just get rid of this whole... Where do the holograms come from?
From the thing.
Kaiba's made these holographic displays.
Oh, so in real life, it's just like really boring.
Yeah.
But Kaiba was just like, I'm basically the Hitler of card games.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I have to make this as superfluous as possible. Well, I guess you have to
edit out some more Hitler stuff.
So... The movie, as well as most and every Yu-Gi-Oh! Series, was done by Studio Gallop, which is a Japanese animation studio, founded by former Moshi Pro members in 1978.
What's Moshi Pro?
Oh, they were just another animation studio. Okay. They worked on, like, Astro Boy or some stuff like that.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They didn't make it, though. They did in-betweens.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. This Studio Gallop is when anime, they started...
Anime has in-betweens? Anime is just...
Just frame. The keyframes.
Yeah, anime is just keyframes.
They have done in-between animation production work for several Studio Ghibli films and produced basically all the Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime series. So that is Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel Monsters, Yu-Gi-Oh! GX, Yu-Gi-Oh! 5Ds, Yu-Gi-Oh! Arc V, and Yu-Gi-Oh! V Reigns.
Okay, why can't they call it something different? I don't like
that.
It's just nonsense words following another nonsense word of Yu-Gi-Oh.
I would love a parody of Yu-Gi-Oh, but it's just poker. And just how, like, ridiculous it would all be.
There probably is one.
Yeah.
Unknown to most people, the original series, which is known as Yu-Gi-Oh! Season 0, people refer to it as, was produced by Toei Animation and actually followed the manga, so it doesn't actually have the card game. It has the various games that the manga had.
Okay.
But... Of course, that one didn't take off as much as the actual anime series. So, we'll get to the plot of this movie. So, set a couple years after Adam returned to the afterlife...
It actually does take place a few years after the original series.
They're in their final year of high school now, even though they always
Because
skip
I did
school.
Notice they did look older, so...
They all look 30.
They don't look 30.
They're also dressed
Joey
like,
looks 30.
They're also all dressed like 17th century, like, European aristocrats.
Yugi's arch-rival Kaiba seeks to rebuild the Millennium Puzzle in hopes of reviving the pharaoh and having one last attempt to defeat him. However, the group known as Plana, with the abilities of bending reality and space...
Just for a card game.
...seek to prevent Adam's resurrection and achieve what they call a world without fear. Yugi then has to battle Kaiba, the planner leader, as well as the main antagonist of the series, Bakura, again, in order to save the world. And that's the plot. So, have you got any, before we go into opening thoughts and whatnot, any questions about Yu-Gi-Oh! As a franchise or anything that
There were so many times when they were playing card games with like dueling against Kaiba. It's like a matter of life and death. And just like, just go up and deck him. Just punch him in the face.
Also,
they're just so holograms.
You said Bakura was the main antagonist in their series?
In the original series, he was.
I did not know that.
So the main series, it's really odd because in the manga, Bakura was always the big bad guy. And if you know, Bakura is
really?
The white-haired kid.
Yes, I know who he is.
Isn't he a kid in the high school?
Yeah, but in the anime, they completely just got rid of his role. Like, they just didn't use him. And then they just kind of stuck him at the end of the anime as, oh, he's the bad guy now.
Oh,
but okay. In the manga, he was always the big bad guy that you
use. So in the end of the original series, did he have that ring that made him evil?
Yeah, the ring is Bakura. This okay. is where it's confusing. There's two Bakuras. There's Bakura Kid and Bakura, the Millennium Ring Spirit. They're completely different. They
just
only
like,
look alike because
yeah,
of...
So just like how Yugi and Artem are like
yeah.
that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, in terms of how this film was produced, there was a problem with it in that because it was made for the 20th anniversary, they really tried to put as much budget as they could. But they were also doing... The studio was also doing Arc V alongside it. So they diverted their writers and outsourcers from Arc V to... the movie. So there's this point in season 3 of Arc V where it just becomes terrible.
Unwatchable.
It does not make sense because all the budget and writers went to this movie. The problem with this film story that people find a bit aggravating is that it's meant to be like a nostalgic hit to the face. And that's why they bring back the Pharaoh. They do all the stuff you want.
Yeah, is that big return scene.
Yeah, I love that scene, by the way. But the thing was, in the original story, because it's following the manga, he wasn't meant to return. The only reason they changed it so he returned in the story was because fans. Which doesn't make sense because the original ending of the series was meant to say goodbye to the Pharaoh, Yugi can now fend for himself and save the world without the Pharaoh. It's meant to be like a coming of age thing. But here it seems like he's
all
reverted.
Anime is coming of
yeah,
age.
Yeah. But here it seems, like, yeah. it seems like he's completely reverted that character arc, which people and my friend... especially doesn't like. He hates this movie because of that. Because it doesn't make sense. It's just stupid.
Like, he can fend for himself in the entire movie, though.
But except also, at the end where that... Adam saved
to be fair,
again.
He was literally going up at this unstoppable creature thing. So that kind of makes sense that he can't fend for himself. Because he's literally being outsmarted.
Yeah. But also, I think it's useful to have an immortal spirit of royalty on your side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have one. His name is Greg.
Oh, Greg.
Never send a boy to do a... immortal Egyptian noble ghost's job.
Especially if his name is Greg.
Greg?
Greg.
Let's go with opening thoughts. Ben, what did you think of this movie?
So, I mentioned this to Stefan. I really liked the first 45 minutes.
I liked the first 9.5 hours.
The first 45 minutes was like very plot-driven. You got to have a sense of all the characters and all that. And that was fun. But then it started to drag in the middle a lot.
Mm.
And then you get to the hour-long ending. Like Lord of the Rings.
Long ending.
Well,
was
this
the last
the hour long ending was the two was Yugi battling Mr. Evil Guy, and then Yugi battling Kaiba, and then Yugi and Kaiba battling the thing. It was three battles as the ending, and I was just like, okay, it's all right, but yeah, it's just so long.
It
could have cut
down.
Out so much.
I just want Yugi to run up to Kaiba with like a lead pipe. Just stop this nonsense. Why are we wasting time with the card games? Just hit him.
Also, I thought Yugi would be more of a protagonist, but instead it was Kaiba who was.
Kaiba pretty much stole the show in this.
Yes.
Because, interesting fact, in the manga, when they farewell the Pharaoh, Kaiba's not there for that scene. In the anime, they stuck him in there and rewrote his lines terribly. But because this follows the comic version,
yes.
Kaiba did not technically say goodbye to the Pharaoh. So his whole arc in this is, despite what he says, he needs that final farewell to him. He hasn't said his farewell.
What, Kaiba to the Pharaoh?
Yeah.
I thought they hated each other.
They were rivals. Japan has this very thing about
like
pride and rivals.
Yeah.
Where there's no greater respect.
Is it like
than
the end of every X-Men movie ever? When Magneto tried to kill Charles Xavier for the previous 2.5 hours, and at the end he's like, goodbye, old friend.
Yes, it's like that.
Yeah, like that, pretty much.
Yeah. Let's play chess in this glass box.
So, your opening thoughts, dare I ask, Michael, besides it being 9.5 hours long?
Oh my god, this was a long movie. I didn't remember anything about Yu-Gi-Oh! At all.
Neither did I.
Not even the rules.
No, I never knew the rules. I didn't remember the rules. Like, it had a, like you said, nice introduction. You get a feel for all the characters. Joey almost kills a police officer. So that was good. The entire time, I just thought, I harp on this so much. It's really hard for me to get past the fact that this entire world, socio-political and economic landscape is contingent on the outcome of card games.
Yes.
Like, it's insane.
I get... I know
it's for kids.
I know.
I understand that. But it's just, it's such a bizarre... Like, everyone treats it so seriously... And everyone's like, I'm going to be a professional dueler when I grow up. It's like, yeah, that's the only occupation. That's all anyone does. It's like old men playing it in parks, like on those little benches.
Yes. Oh, look, it's Magneto and Charles Xavier playing Yu-Gi-Oh. You would think, though, that the main, like, what everyone would be excited about is the hologram technology. But no one gives a crap about the hologram technology.
Medicine or, like, diagnosis or, like, I don't know, even, like, the military could probably find use for it. No. Dragons! Kyber's an idiot.
He is.
Okay, Stefan, your opening thoughts.
Sorry, you go now.
So, I'm comparing this film to The Pyramid of Life, the first Yu-Gi-Oh! Film, which I really liked the story structure of it.
I don't remember. I know they go into a pyramid and there's light.
Pyramid of Light was 75 minutes and felt a lot brisker, and yet all their arcs felt a lot more secure. Whereas here, that, again, as I agree with Ben, that midpoint just slows down with just any sort of progression.
But I didn't like D.Va.
No, D.Va was cool. I liked how ridiculous his hair was.
Everyone had Yugi has the most ridiculous hair.
It's like 6 feet high and it's 11 different colours.
The animation in this was a bit perplexing because it looked gorgeous, except when it wasn't. Like, there were some designs that I just did not agree with. Like, when Yugi and Kaiba are versing Bakura D.Va, the final boss dragon, whatever you call that.
Yeah.
The first thing Yugi summons is these gloop monsters. They look like slime. They're the worst design things I've ever seen. It's like, they don't look like Yu-Gi-Oh! Monsters. They look like puddles of water.
I do appreciate that, but I will get into it a bit later about why. So keep going.
Were they CGI?
That's the other thing I don't like, and I was going to say,
mind that stuff.
I didn't. I didn't like it as much because I really like how the 2D artists draw the dragons and the monsters.
Oh, okay.
Because even on the back cover, they're drawn in 2D and they look gorgeous. Whereas in 3D, there's always that dissonance. Mm. And although the 3D and the CG...
It's really nice 3D.
It's nice, but...
That's what I was going to say. It's integrated.
It doesn't
really
have
well.
That nice rendering that they usually do.
Yeah.
But it's integrated really well. The only thing is that, like, it's rendered at a frame rate that obviously isn't an anime's frame rate. They're much more smooth.
Mm.
And the animation for them, isolated, is wonderful. It looks great, but I just don't... It's the same with why I don't like seeing 3D Gundam. Like, giant battle robots, when they're done, hand-drawn lines and whatnot, it just has that extra feel. You can see the character from them. Like, the Blue Eyes White Dragon showed up many times in this, but I didn't really recognize him. Whereas, in the when he's 2D, the Blue Eyes White Dragon undeniably looks like the Blue Eyes. And it just has that extra,
pointy.
That character that you can see through the show. Whereas here, it still feels a bit sterile having that CG. Despite it having obviously been a lot harder and more expensive to produce.
Is the Blue Eyes White Dragon like the best card or something?
No.
Or is it
nowhere
a good
near.
Card? Is it a good card?
It's an all right
card. I remember watching a Yu-Gi-Oh! Something. Where they made like a huge deal out of it. And there's this really climactic scene when they ripped the card in half.
That's the first episode.
Is that the first episode?
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I remember
basically they had this...
It's like comical. He's like, I'm going to rip it. I'm crazy. I'm going to rip a card.
No, Kaiba's whole thing was they're talking about the card and Kaiba just rips it in front of them because he's like, no, I'm only allowed to have them.
Okay.
I'm sure there's like, it just hard cuts like a Japanese like production factory and there's just like sheets and sheets of them being rolled out.
Can I talk about Kaiba and D.Va?
Okay, let's start with just talking about the film now. We know the plot.
So Kaiba and D.Va, the things I don't like about them is the fact that their decks are purely one type of thing. Kaiba just has dragon cards and a million and one Blue Eyes White Dragon alternative type cards.
Actually, that's another thing. Are there any rules to like
what type
how
of
you
cards?
Structure your deck?
Yes.
Because you can just have billions of good cards.
You can only have a certain number of trap cards, certain number of spell cards, certain amount of monsters, and you can only have three of each card.
Okay.
But
and there's some cards that are limited, some cards that are not allowed in official games.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but some cards are shit.
Yes.
So why don't you just get all the good cards?
Because you have to collect them.
You have to collect them.
Yeah, but it's randomized, I would assume.
Surely there's like rich kids at school that just like, my dad works at the Yu-Gi-Oh factory and he just gets me a sheet of Exodia.
That was the whole dynamic of in the original series where Kaiba bought all of his good cards. Yugi had his handed down to him from the Pharaoh and from his grandfather. And everyone always praised Joey because Joey had no money, nothing, but he was still an alright duelist.
He just steals his cards.
No, he didn't. He just kind of gets them.
But no, so...
He's got that...
We have Kaiba. He has all the bloody dragon cards, which annoyed me. It's like, just, you know, do a different thing. And then you have D.Va, and all he had was the V-Jarm and the cubic things. And yeah. I was like, what the hell? Talk about that,
I'm comparing
Stefan.
It to the original, the Pyramid of Light movie, because I'm ashamed this wasn't as good as the Pyramid of Light, because it could have obviously been a grand finale to the Yu-Gi-Oh! Franchise. But it wasn't. It felt a bit meandering, and the duels weren't all that awe-inspiring. But with those, Kaiba doesn't just have dragon cards. For this, it just seems like they throw in him just summoning the blue eyes because that's what he does. In the Pyramid of Life, he has like these robot cards. He has a Deck Virus card. He has a lot of
see that would have been great
that
to see.
Are just jerk cards. Like they're the cards that you look at and say, "Man, you're a real jerk, aren't you?"
Yeah, but those are the good cards.
No, but
because they're effective.
Yeah, but yeah. Whereas D.Va's deck is so boring. It's just like...
It's V-Jarm and cubic things.
That's it. And you can't beat them because they just split into two, freeze your monster, and respawn. Like, it's
that
boring.
That annoyed me. Also, one more thing that annoyed me. Also, so you know how when you shuffle your card deck, it's all randomized?
Yeah.
No, none of this was randomized. It's like, oh, I'm going to specifically plan to play this card, then this card, then this card.
That's because...
It's nothing. Nothing that is randomized. And like Yu-Gi-Oh, he had the three trap things that was able to defeat D.Va right at the end. It's like, I'm going to plan it.
And they loudly...
Exactly like that. And it worked. I don't like that.
They loudly enunciate which card they're going to play before they play it.
Yeah, that's just how the series is always run.
I don't mind theatrical? That. But the fact that they carefully plan out exactly which cards, even though it's meant to be randomized, really annoys me.
Decks nowadays are planned. You're only allowed 59 cards in a deck, or an official game deck.
Still, 59. And they play a maximum of 10 cards each.
Is there one time when like someone goes to play a card, like, oh no, I left the Joker in the deck?
No, but each scenario, like, now in an official duel, the first six cards you pick up, no matter what the combination is, you already need a plan for that thing. So basically, in a duel nowadays, you should be able to shut down your opponent in that one hand. No matter what it is. No matter if it's randomized. You're just that good and know your deck that well that none of your cards are unnecessary and all your cards feed into each other.
Okay.
Which is where it makes more sense with themed cards where you've got like... A Blue Eyes deck, which focuses on the Blue Eyes and ways of summoning the Blue Eyes. Because the second you have your Blue Eyes out with a Blue Eyes deck, you can dominate your opponent with your Blue Eyes and he'll never leave your side of the field.
Not random, though. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, the odds that... Like, Yu-Gi-Oh had those three trap cards to defeat D.Va first,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's...
The odds of getting those three cards in the very first hand and he put them all down is stupid.
No, just... He's a good duelist. Just accept he's a good duelist. And
that's got nothing to do with luck when you're shuffling, Stefan.
No,
Yeah, if you just shuffle, where's the skill? How do you win?
No... Oh my goodness.
But he needed those three specific cards to beat him.
What does that wrist blade have to do with anything?
It's just cool.
Instead of having a table to do it on, you have it just on your wrist.
You do it at tables in the park, like elderly men in New York.
Like in Jerry's game.
Like in
that
Jerry's
Pixar
game.
Short.
This is like Yu-Gi-Oh! Just like...
Anyway, now that I've talked about the things I didn't like, what I really liked was the very opening sequence where it had those spinning planets or stars and stuff and it went into Kaiba's ship.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really great intro sequence, just because it just like really captured me with the anime. Like, it was really good
it was
animation.
Such a cool shade.
Anyway, I really liked that intro. It was really fun, and it really got me into it straight away. And also, I didn't feel lost in this movie, despite not watching Yu-Gi-Oh! In 15 years. So I really appreciated that.
It was a bit convoluted how they introduced the planet as this new group that has apparently always been there. That's a bit on
it's,
the nose.
Yeah, it is, but... As someone who hasn't watched it in 15 years, maybe they showed it in the TV show.
They
who
didn't
knows?
At all, they didn't exist. Otherwise, Master Shin, who's shown up in the series quite a bit, would have said something to Yugi like, hey, when you die, these guys are going to have the power to destroy reality. Why are you guys going to have that power?
Because plot.
But I want to talk about the visuals, because what did you actually think of the visual aesthetic?
It looks like an anime.
It looks like
it looks like the show. And
that's just, not to say...
I think it looked way better than the show.
I haven't watched it in 15 years.
Yeah, exactly. I have no frame of reference.
It's just what I remembered what the show looked like.
Well, I really love the aesthetic in terms of its 2D parts. As was said, there's a bit of discrepancy between that and the 3D. I really love how shiny and blue everything is because it's...
Shiny and chrome.
Yeah, it's one of those futures. It's not the one you like where everything looks lived in. This is one of those futures where everything's clean and shiny.
Nah, I don't like those futures.
But yeah, it works Star well Wars in this prequels. Film. Like, I love that blue. It looks really nice and dynamic and matches the original Yu-Gi-Oh! Aesthetic. I love some of the animation parts, but there's some animations that really... Like, I knew this film had budget, but some of the animations are just jagged, like, really stilted.
Mm.
And usually you could say, oh, anime animation is not exactly the best.
Because it's just keyframes.
But usually anime films are incredibly well done. And
yes,
to see...
like, all the animated films, anime films we've watched on this have been really good.
Yeah, whereas here, like, some of the movements of the Dark Magician and the Dark Magician Girl, when they're just kind of being panned across the screen, it's like... I've seen better animation in the show, that's saying something.
Actually, that's another problem I had. You have the Dark Magician, this awesome dark-looking sorcerer with this, like, armor everywhere. Then you have the Dark Magician girls, and they're just, like, scantily clad people.
Yeah. It's just what
anyway,
it is.
Let's continue with something about
me. I found
anime
fan service really uncomfortable for some reason.
Everyone finds it uncomfortable. It's just...
Why do they do it then?
Because it's fan service!
There's something... No, there's just... There's something...
Is it really fan service or is it just pervert service?
No, yeah,
probably that.
It I don't know. I don't know. I don't think there's any way to, like, sexualize animation in a way that doesn't come off as creepy.
Mm.
I think it's all creepy.
It's all creepy. It's very creepy. You know, there was a shot that... There were a few shots in this film that were actually animated by the author himself.
An animator?
No, he's not.
So, was that the bad animation?
Well, there's a bit of clunkiness in it, but I'll tell you which parts. It's when Yugi's versing Kaiba for the first time and he does, like, the... It does an epic pan around Yugi and he puts on his dual disc.
Mm.
That was done entirely by him. Now, I love the 360 sweep they did in that, but the animation itself, when the arm comes up, looks quite jarring, which makes sense because he's obviously not an animator, but it was still a dynamic composition, which I find this film does a lot of really nice transitions and sweeps and really gets a cinematic aesthetic with how it uses its camera, how it uses its colors and compositions. But the individual animations themselves are not incredible. I feel like that should be the main focus. The most impressive animation, which really is me ashamed to say, is the little belts on Kaiba's arms when they're flicking in the wind. Because that's just a nice secondary action. But there's never anything like that in, like, the main body of the characters.
Yeah, because...
They always reserve the animation, the good animation, for very odd instances.
Yeah, the reason why I haven't talked about animation yet is because nothing stuck out to me as great. It was just, it is moving. It is doing the base thing.
It
that
had
they
a
need
nice
to do.
Aesthetic. It had nice animation, but there's nothing that really stood out as, oh, this is movie grade animation.
Was it a theatrical release?
Yes.
But not in Australia, I'm guessing.
It did in Australia, not... It
probably did, like, one showing
well.
At Melbourne Central at, like, 12 in the afternoon.
I think it got 10 million worldwide.
That's so low!
Is that low?
Yes,
that's
it
insane.
Okay.
Worldwide, especially, that is really low.
Michael, have you got anything to...
Not really. I have just more complaints about the card game.
Do it!
Does anyone want to question how this whole film is driven by Kaiba's ego? He is so egotistical and so selfish driven that he breaks into the afterlife to duel a pharaoh. That's what he does.
He just pries it open with a crowbar and goes into the afterlife.
His whole stick, like his whole thing throughout the series that people and the abridged series always comment on is that he screws the rules. But this is the most screws the rules moment that... How do you break into the afterlife? How do you do that?
He wants to duel him in the afterlife.
Yeah, he doesn't even say anything. He's like, he's so proud that he even is standing in the afterlife. He's just like, I'm so gonna beat you.
I just wanted to go, it was like, this is the afterlife. I don't care about card games. Hit him with some sticks. What country are they in?
Japan?
Ah, Then why is Joey from, like, New York?
Because that's the whole joke. And he's just... I love that. They kept every single past voice actor from the English dub. That's why I said do the English dub. Because Dan Green, who voices Yugi Moto...
That's right.
He loves that role. And he's so good at it. He nails it every time.
I really like Joey in this. He was fun.
Joey's always fun.
I just wanted him to be the protagonist. He's just bumbling around, not getting that dual disc
thing. Him
with
his New York accent.
Yeah, it would have been fun. And
But I wanted to talk about where the Pharaoh returns, which is probably the only worthwhile thing in the entire film. Because when he appears, he appears in like solid gold. And the liquid, like...
Then Back in Black starts playing.
And it looks just phenomenal. Like, it's like all the budget just went into him appearing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought that was incredible.
Also, he didn't talk.
No, he didn't. Not at all.
Did they just not want to get the voice actor back?
He's the same voice actor. It's Dan Green.
They might have got someone different because it's a different person.
No, the same voice
actor. Oh, I don't know this. You could have said something.
Yugi and Atem have always been the same voice actors.
Okay, good on them. 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. But no, I really liked how they use, even in the Japanese version, they use the English theme song for when he comes back. Because that English theme song became so iconic to Yu-Gi-Oh! That they just ended up using it. It's like how the Pokemon theme song became synonymous with Pokemon, despite the fact that it was for the English one only. Well... This is actually a terrible conversation. So let's just go with final thoughts. Michael, do you hate Yu-Gi-Oh?
I think so. This didn't make me like it less.
Look, the first 45 minutes made me want to rewatch the series.
And then the last 2 hours.
It was just like, maybe not.
It's not
maybe
that much not. Longer than that, Stefan, in real life.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was fine. It's an anime movie of an anime.
Overall, it was fine, yes. What about you, Stefan?
I reckon even though people have been saying that this isn't as good, I actually had high expectations because I love the Pyramid of Light movie.
Well, that's your fault.
But the story structure was way off. There was something to do... Like, I still like... There's a lot I do like about this film in terms of its visuals, but there's... so many discrepancies that I'd prefer just watching the original series.
Mm.
Like, I liked the story progression in that better. But I still had a lot of fun watching it. I agree with you, though. The first 45 minutes are the best part of the film.
Hooray.
But yeah, that's
Wait, you don't great. Want to talk about the stupid Vizhum designs?
Which Vizhum? They look like eyes. They're all just eyes. They're so lazily... Like, I don't like their designs. And especially when they're done as CG. Mm. CG makes everything look cheap whether you like it or not. Like, unless it's really, really well done 3D. Which this
wasn't.
Is... It's good 3D, but it's not well done 3D. Yes. And those eyes just look like eyes. Like, I was comparing it to Pegasus's main creature in the original series, Relinquished. He's this awesome-looking shell thing with, like, a Millennium Eye as its main face. And it looks creepy. It looks scary. It looks like something from the original manga, which was originally meant to be a horror.
Hmm.
Whereas this just looks like an eye monster. Like, there's nothing really distinct about it.
I accidentally dropped a blob of ink onto the paper. Let's draw an eye on it and call it a day.
I think that was the most prevalent with Yugi's first summon, with that epic duel between Kaiba him versus Bakura. And the first thing he summons is two slime monsters.
I like that because it is a random card. It's like, oh, better just do
no,
it and get it out of
the way.
No,
but they did that so much better in Pyramid of Light, where the things he summons first off is Celtic Guardian, which is really weak, and Waterpon, the weakest fluff ball, and it's so cute when...
I remember that thing.
Just picture, like, just the dragon just, like, punting it
no,
as soon
it.
As it comes up.
That's what they do. They have this ferocious creature just roar at it, and you see Waterpon's face, and it's just terrifying.
That's what my brother got when we got the cards with the game. I got the Supreme Dark Magician.
And he got Waterpon. Well, yes. How do you feel?
I felt good about
that. Do they ever play the card game without the holograms and it's really slow?
Episode 1.
Oh, really?
That's it.
Is it just...
It's what you would expect.
It's when they're at school and they're just playing it on the desk and Yugi's saying, "Man, Joey, you suck." And Joey's like, "Yeah."
Also, that means all the cards must have like little barcodes and stuff in it, right?
Barcodes?
How else are you going to know what the hologram is going to be of?
Oh, yeah, they'd have to have some kind of, like, chip
a
in
A chip
them.
Or
yeah.
something.
I like don't a Mikey, get how Kaiba's system...
Like a Mikey card, and then you accidentally chip one of the edges, and you can't touch on, and then you have to give the PSO your email address.
Did that happen to you?
So, can we finish this book?
Not okay. PSO, it's public security, no, we're the Mikey officers.
Yeah. Michael, what are we doing next week?
Well, I'm completing our trilogy of films you remember from your childhood that have things that don't talk, that turn into things that talk, or things that talk turning into things that don't ordinarily talk. And this transformation was catalyzed by the consumption of a cereal, potion, and or elixir. And their cartoons. So, the first week was Help, I'm a Fish.
No, it wasn't. We're Back. The first one was We're Back, a Dinosaur Story.
You didn't even get that right.
No.
The second one was
I'll say it backwards then. The second week was Help, I'm a Fish. The first week was We're Back, a Dinosaur Story. And now this next one will be Help, I'm a Llama, a David Spade story.
Next week, we are doing The Emperor's New Groove.
Mm.
Okay, if you'd like to contact us and give us any criticisms or praise or money or
criticisms.
Or suggestions. Or criticisms. Please do. We want suggestions and see what you guys want us to do.
Or criticisms.
We are at animate3pod@gmail.com. You can find us wherever podcasts are. And that is all from us this week.
Yep.
So, as anyone always says, it's time to do.
Turn the machine off. The end. Was it good?
I don't know.
Was it a good discussion?